And welcome back to the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Crossroads Bar and Grill in Downs. We're joined now by John Kurtz of 1350 K-Man in Manhattan. He's a sports director there. You can also hear him on The Game weekday afternoons from 4 to 6 there on 1350 K-Man in Manhattan, Kansas. Of course, home to the Kansas State Wildcats. John, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing good. Have you ever played those college basketball player drafts? Are you involved in any of that?
I have not done that. That sounds honestly more appealing and more fun than the brackets just themselves, though.
We had a draft the other night, and so we picked players. It's just like fantasy football in essence, and the most points the guy scores, you want to figure out who is going to go deep in the tournament. And then when you pick a guy that you really like and then they lose first or second round, you almost feel like ripping up your list of players, just like you feel like ripping up your bracket after you had a big 12 over 5, or if you had a 1 seed or a 2 seed get knocked off early in the tournament. But it is a lot of fun. And Marcus Foster I have on my team, so now I'm conflicted. You see where I'm at here? I think I want Foster.
Yeah, that's...
I want Foster to go for 48 and K-State win by 2. Is that crazy?
No, I don't think so. I mean, if you're talking about scores, man, it doesn't get much better than Marcus Foster. 20 a game, and that's really all he's been. I know Bruce Weber made reference to it, too. He's basically the same kind of guy at Creighton right now that he was at K-State, what he was tracking to be anyway. So he's all about scoring. I mean, I think you're probably good for at least 20 points. That's one that I would say has a pretty, a high floor. I think Marcus Foster's a high floor guy, even if they do get bounced in the first round.
Okay, cool. I feel better about that pick then. And it was not my first pick, by the way. It was later on in the draft. John Kurtz is with us. K-State Creighton, and there's, of course, the subplot is Marcus Foster versus K-State. Last I checked, it will not just be Marcus Foster 1-on-5 against K-State. But how is this being portrayed there in Manhattan, and how excited are K-State fans to see Marcus Foster on the other side of the floor for an NCAA tournament game?
It's really interesting. I mean, I think there's so much on the line that doesn't surround Marcus Foster. Bruce Weber trying to get the monkey off his back, actually winning an NCAA tournament game in the round of 64 anyway, but there's no doubt that Marcus Foster being there is a really juicy storyline. And I think it'll affect the fans quite a bit, because what you're looking at about 8 o'clock, 8:15, whatever it might be when the game is over on Friday, is you're either going to have one half of the fan base going off about the fact that Marcus Foster, the guy that sort of blew up the program a couple years ago and many thought should have cost Bruce Weber his job, is the one that winds up ending his season and moving on. And you can imagine the fans on that side of the aisle, their reaction to that. But then on the other side, what poetic justice, I guess, if Bruce Weber builds the program back up and then gets his first tournament win by beating Marcus Foster, the guy that kind of painted him into this corner in the first place. So it definitely, I think, evokes a lot of the same emotions that people had back when all this first happened, and how fired up people were on either side at that point in time when he wound up leading the charge basically on that exodus of 6 scholarship players from his sophomore season.
You referred to it. I certainly hear it a lot. You probably hear it even more, that there's certainly detractors for Bruce Weber. There are still supporters of Bruce Weber, but they're certainly not as vocal. What do you think it would take for some of those detractors to maybe back off a little bit for Bruce Weber in this NCAA tournament? Would it be a Sweet 16 appearance? Would it be winning a game? Would it be that there's nothing he can do, that those people don't even care if he makes the Final Four? What would Bruce Weber and this K-State team have to do to get some of those people to quiet down?
I think it depends on what percentage you're looking to actually win over. I mean, there are going to be some that it's a fairly small group, I guess, probably, but there are going to be some that you're just never going to win over, I think, if you're Bruce Weber. And people have been that way since day one. A lot of it has to do with Frank Martin. I think everybody kind of understands the story there. But, you know, if you're talking about people that are a little more reasonable, that have come to the point where they're frustrated with the program, I mean, I can use one person I always cite on our show, my dad, I think, is a good barometer of this, because he's just all about K-State. And at first he was very pro-Bruce Weber, but the last couple of years kind of come around to being very frustrated with it. And I think if you're talking about somebody like him, which I think there's a lot of people like that, a tournament win would be a really nice step. I'm not going to say that would totally win everybody over and think that he is as good as Frank Martin was, that kind of thing, because Frank won 6 tournament games and went to the Elite Eight. But just proving that he could win a game in the tournament would be a really nice step, and I think would buy him a lot of goodwill towards next season when you have virtually this entire roster coming back. So that to me is really where the step is. And I, some of why I say that is because Virginia just seems like such a daunting menace there as the number one seed. K-State's really struggled against teams that defend, and Virginia defends as well as anybody we've seen in college basketball in a while. So seems like a Sweet 16 run is unlikely, but if you did that, I mean, then you're probably talking about really winning over that crowd completely. So I think it's sort of a sliding scale based on what happens.
What do you think, because I get asked this a lot, not necessarily asked this, I have people sharing their opinion sometimes when I don't even ask for it, which is okay. And that is, what are, well, since you brought up your dad, I'd be interested to know what maybe he thinks. What do you think are the realistic expectations for K-State men's basketball year in and year out?
I think that, to me, the Frank Martin era was a pretty good barometer of what it can be. Now, Bruce Weber's been to the tournament four times now in 6 years, but I think some of it, you know, you go in a playing game, you lose in the first round of Kentucky. I think you want it to be a little bit above that, and in between there, you don't want the five-win Big 12 season that was mixed in there for Bruce Weber as well. I think this season is sort of a good baseline for about where you want to be year in and year out. You feel like you should be in the tournament, you're a nine seed this year, that you should 4 out of 5 years say, that was Frank Martin, 4 out of 5 years you're in the NCAA tournament, one NIT in the other season. I think that's a pretty reasonable expectation. So using this as a baseline, not having too many seasons that dip real far below this, I still think is a fairly reasonable expectation. Now, I'm not saying it all has to be cookie cutter the exact same, but somewhere around there, you know, flirting with the tournament at the very least every single year, with every 3 or 4 years making a run at being one of the top 2 or 3 teams in the Big 12. I think that's a reasonable expectation based on what we saw K-State could do with Frank Martin, and the fact that people like to tout all the time that when Street and Smith did a magazine with the top 25 college basketball programs of all time, not all that long ago, since the turn of the century anyway, and K-State was in the top 25. So if you're going to talk about yourself as a top 25 all-time program, and we've seen what Frank Martin can do in the modern era at K-State, I still think that, you know, the expectation should be raised a bit from what it has been over the last few years.
John Kurtz, sports director at 1350 K-Man Manhattan, our guest today on the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Crossroads Bar and Grill in Down. So let's talk more about the game itself. I'm going to ask you to be a doctor here, I guess. What's the medical condition and situation for Brown and Wade going into the first round game tomorrow?
Not worried about Barry Brown at all. We saw him at their last media availability on Sunday before they headed off to Charlotte. And honestly, you know, if you wouldn't have told me anything about his eye, I'm not sure that I could have picked out that anything was really wrong. So I'm not worried about Barry Brown, and I think he is practicing. It'll be fine and good to go. Dean Wade's a much different situation. It sounds like he's not really practicing much, if at all, this week leading up to the game. And he's the one that you need to be more worried about. I mean, he looked just so out of it in the second half, and they weren't even trying to feed him the ball of that Kansas game, or the TCU game, excuse me, at the Big 12 tournament. So I think he's the one that you have to wonder what percentage he is going to be at when he actually goes out there on the floor. Now, Bruce Weber cited that Wesley Owundu had a really similar injury last season and played 4 or 5 weeks basically with it. So if you buy into that, then Wesley Owundu was playing some of his best basketball at the end of the year. So you could very well say that Dean Wade can get out there and play no problem. So I think it'll be one of those, they probably won't know really 100% until he gets out there on the floor just how effective he's going to be. But I think he'll play. It's just a matter of how effective he'll be.
What problems or matchup problems does Creighton pose for K-State? You know, Foster, of course, people are going to key on, but Creighton has more than just Marcus Foster.
Yeah, they do, and I keep forgetting the kid's last name, but Kyrie is their other guard who scores 15 or so a game. I mean, they've got some big-time scores between him and Marcus Foster. The thing with them is they're a really high-octane offense. I mean, they want to push the tempo and play at a really fast pace. They score over 80 points a game. They're a lot like TCU and Oklahoma is basically the comparisons that I can give you in the Big 12. And the good news there for K-State fans is that K-State went 4-1 in those games that they played against TCU and Oklahoma. K-State's really had more success this year against teams that do want to get up and down the floor and make it a more wide-open offensive game. They've had their biggest struggles against Texas Tech and West Virginia by far. I think the worst 4 games basically that they've played this year against teams that want to slog the game down and really get up in your shorts and defend you. Creighton's not that, and K-State is a pretty good defensive team themselves. So I would think it'd be really interesting to see how Barry Brown can lock down Marcus Foster. Barry Brown, one of the best defenders in the Big 12 on the all-league defense team. That, to me, is one of the key matchups there. And I honestly think that you're talking about drawing an 8-9 game where you're going to be basically a 50-50 shot, I like the matchup. You say the NCAA tournament's all about matchups. I actually like it for K-State in the first round here. It's just I think you got worst-case scenario in the round of 32 if you do advance there.
Okay, I hear this a lot. I'm sure you do too, and that is how many minutes should Kamau Stokes play? First of all, I don't even know if he's that close to 100%. I don't think he's back to where he once was. But what are your thoughts on the minutes distribution for Jada and Stokes and how they should handle that going in the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, I've been pretty much on the side of cutting back Kamau Stokes' minutes for maybe a couple weeks by this point. He's not right. He'll tell you he's 100%. He was trying to say that at the Big 12 tournament last week, but Bruce Weber will even come out and tell you he's not close to 100%. They used 60% a couple of weeks ago, Bruce did, when asked where Kamau was at. So he's clearly not there, and he's just not very effective right now. And the problem becomes, who else do you play? Well, we saw Mike McGurl actually get some decent minutes against Kansas when Barry Brown was out, and McGurl goes out there and more than holds his own. He had 4 assists, no turnovers against Kansas, and really helped, I think, in K-State coming back and getting that to a 2-point game in the second half. So I wouldn't be totally opposed to even using Mike McGurl a little bit more. Unless Kamau Stokes comes out and knocks down his first shot, then I think it becomes different because he's kind of like a microwave, some instant offense if he gets hot. But if he's not, don't think he's providing you a ton of value defensively, and some of that is due to the injury. And then clearly offensively, if his three isn't falling, there's not much else that he can provide right now. So I'm actually more on the side than it seems like the coaching staff is of bailing on Kamau Stokes at this point in time. But I can tell you, they continue to say publicly that they're gonna stick with Kamau, and they keep hoping that at some point he's going to have one of those games where he can pop for 10, 12, 15 points and help him out.
All right, so I'm going to put you on the spot. Who do you think wins this game tomorrow night, K-State or Creighton?
I'll take K-State. I think it'll be really close. I think K-State wants to keep this game at the very least in the 70s, whereas Creighton wants to push it up in the 80s or 90s. I'll give K-State just a very slight edge and say the Cats win 72-69.
Okay, so that means they would move on, and I would guess you're not picking a 16 over a 1, so that would mean K-State would play Virginia. First team to 40 win that game?
Yeah, more or less. I was going to tell someone the other day, man, I feel like they may score about 32 points if they play Virginia, but that'll be really tough, especially if you don't have a healthy Dean Wade, depending on how all that's going. I don't see any way that they really get past Virginia. I could have bought it much more if they were playing Villanova or Xavier, say the other 2-1 seeds that would have been possible. So, unfortunately, I don't see a big run coming, but if they do get that win over Creighton, that would be some market progress for the program this year.
All right. You told me you just filled out your bracket here recently, so who is in your Final Four in your bracket?
Oh, man. I'm going to have to think about this. I know I had Arizona winning it all. Arizona, Duke, North Carolina, and I'm forgetting the other region.
Villanova, Purdue is the 1 and the 2.
Villanova.
You've got the exact same Final Four as I do. The exact same Final Four. And you got Arizona against who in the championship?
It was Arizona and Duke's on that other side, right?
Yep,
Arizona and Duke.
So you got Arizona over Duke?
I did, yeah.
All right,
Arizona. What a story that would be.
Well,
John Miller winning it all.
I've got Duke over Arizona. That's the only difference. Otherwise, we're identical to that. Let's shift gears to the football team for a moment. Delvin Wermack saying he changed his mind. He's coming back. And that caught me by surprise because the way K-State runs their offense, quarterback's going to run. Alex Barnes talked about not getting enough carries. And then when he's hot for a few carries against Oklahoma, next thing you know, he doesn't carry it for 2.5 quarters. Would that surprise you that he announced he's coming back? And what does that maybe mean? Does that mean that with the new offensive coordinators, I say coordinators, there's one, but there'll be a lot of guys that'll have the input, of course, and they're younger than Dana Dimmel. Are they going to change the offense philosophy a little bit? It's hard for me to believe that with Bill Snyder and so predominate on the quarterback run game. But what are you hearing and why Wormack would come back?
Well, first of all, with the coordinators, there's about 7 guys on the staff right now with coordinator in their title, so I don't know how you sort all that out.
Exactly.
But, I think there is going to be some change on the offensive side of the ball, and that's what Delvin Wermack cited in the little note that he put out on Twitter when he said he was coming back, that Eric Hickson played a big role in bringing him back into the fold, who's going to be the new running backs coach. So, I think it's really no secret that there was some player discontent with Dana Dimmel and what was going on there with how he's giving up the carries. Alex Barnes publicly voiced some concerns there. So I'm sure what's going on now with Andre Coleman technically really being the head guy, he is going to make some changes. And the fact that Eric Hickson is a young, exciting presence, I think, on the staff really helps out. So I think you could see maybe some more multiple back sets using these guys, getting more creative and how they're going to do that. I'm really looking forward to it, to be completely honest, because it just seemed like things had gotten pretty stale for the offense. And the vibe that I'm getting right now out of Veneer is that there's just a lot of excitement. There is younger guys in charge on the staff, obviously, with Colin and Andre, two of the head guys on the offensive side of the ball, and then Eric Hickson that I mentioned as well. They got younger on the other side of the football also, with Coach Norwood coming in. So I think there's actually going to be some decent changes because Bill Snyder basically, you know, going back to 2012, 2013, you could kind of start to figure out that the offense really was in control of Dana Dimmel. This is not the Bill Snyder of old who is, you know, meticulously poring over every single detail of what plays are being called. I think he's given a lot of autonomy to the coaches and the coordinators over the last 4 or 5 years. So I would expect things to look considerably different.
Okay, so now I'm really going to put you on the spot, and that is, and this is strictly opinion, and I'm curious because I hear about this quite a bit from K-State Nation, and that is, when Bill Snyder finally decides to hang it up, who will be the next head football coach at Kansas State? I never bought in that this was going to be Bill Snyder's last year. I heard that quite a bit. To me, he's a lifer. He's going to coach as long as he possibly can, and it's going to be health that's going to stop him. And of course, we knew about the health issues he just had, and that didn't stop him. I think he's probably going to coach for a few more years. I could be wrong on that assessment. How many years do you think Bill Snyder will coach? And then who would be your top guy that you might want to go after to be the head coach after Bill Snyder at K-State?
Well, I'm with you in that I've always said and thought that it is going to be health that forces him to step down. You know, every year everyone wants to go out and predict that this is going to be the year that he retires, and I kind of take the opposite stance. I'm going to say every year he's going to come back until someday I'm proven wrong, but I think it will take health at this point, and we've seen health not even really totally stop him with the cancer diagnosis, obviously. Who the next head coach is going to be, I think, is just so up in the air now because of Gene Taylor being there. I mean, I think with John Curry, especially with the story coming out about Leavitt last fall, we have a pretty good idea that he had Leavitt circled as a guy that he really wanted to be the successor there in Manhattan. I don't think it's going to be Sean Snyder. I don't think that's the route Gene Taylor is going to want to go. So I think it just opens it up to Gene Taylor trying to have a regional, national search for who the next head coach is going to be. Now, if you're asking me, I mean, I do really like the idea of Brent Venables if that were possible, but I'm just not sure how realistic that actually is. I mean, the guy's making a ton of money, basically head coach money, to be the defensive coordinator at Clemson right now. So I've never been all that sold on him being a realistic option. And outside of that, I just don't know. I mean, Jim Leavitt is already getting up there into his 60s, so he's not going to be a spring chicken if you were to bring him in a couple of years if Bill Snyder were to step down, say, 2 or 3 years from now. So I think it's – I'll just give you I hate to dance around the question too much, but I would say Brent Venables would be my top choice if it were possible, and I think Snyder's probably still got 2-3 more years until something happens and he would be forced to step down. But it's Bill Snyder. I'm not really going to put anything past him at this point.
Exactly. How important do you think it will be for Gene Taylor or simply the supporters and donors of the program for the next head coach to have K-State ties?
I don't think it'll be the be-all, end-all. I really don't. And I've never been one that bought all that much into, okay, this has to be someone with K-State ties within the K-State family. Now, they've done that with all the assistants that they continue to hire, but I think a lot of that is because to work under Bill Snyder, you need to have a good idea of what you're going to be in for with the extra hours and just what it's going to take to work for a guy like that. So I'm not the biggest on that. And I just, Gene Taylor strikes me as someone whose hiring track record has been he's hired in-house if it's the right guy. Chris Kleiman is the head coach right now at North Dakota State. They hired from in-house when Craig Bull left for Wyoming. But he's also proven that he would go totally outside of things. I think he went really outside the box when he brought Tim Miles in there to North Dakota State to be the basketball coach. So I think he's willing to look at anyone and everyone. And I don't think he would limit it to just somebody with K-State ties.
I agree with you. I don't know. For some reason, I have a premonition that he will hire somebody that doesn't have much of a tie to K-State. But once again, we'll find out if that comes to fruition or not. All right. So then the next question is, Bruce Weber, how much longer do you think he'll coach at K-State? And if he is gone at some point in the next few years, who would be your first choice to replace him?
I really don't have a good answer for basketball, you know, if you're talking about a replacement right now, because Brad Underwood's ship has seemingly sailed. Frank Martin, South Carolina, Lon Kruger, Bob. I mean, all these guys that are out there, I don't think would be become realistic possibilities at all. So I don't think there's a great name. I'll be honest. I would just say if and when the time comes, just open it up again and see what you got, see who the mid-major names are. I mean, the one that you could float maybe is Steve Henson, who's at UTSA, I believe it is now. They had an okay year this year, surpassed some expectations. But I think a couple years from now, he's turned into a hot mid-major name. Maybe that's there. And I say a couple years from now because, I mean, look, Bruce Weber's not going anywhere for the foreseeable future, because it looks like next season they're set up to have at least as good of a year as they had this season with the entire roster back, assuming that nothing happens to any of the major players. So he's definitely going to be back next year. You would expect them to have a nice season next year, which is going to be another year after that. I think it would take some kind of a disaster of a season next year, really not living up to the expectations. Maybe that would be enough to get him out of there, but I think for right now he can feel pretty good about his job security.
Do you expect Weber to get an extension here fairly quickly after the season's over?
I don't know about that. I have seen some chatter about that. I think if he does, barring a run to the Sweet 16 the second weekend, something that would really legitimately probably earn him some kind of a raise and extension, I don't think you would see an extension that would be much more than just window dressing, which is just like the last one for recruiting purposes, just to try and throw another year or two on the contract to make it look better, the optics look better to recruits. But really, in actuality, it's not doing all that much as far as financial compensation is concerned. So, yeah, it could happen. I just don't think it would be anything that would be all that significant or meaningful unless, like I said, he goes on a big run.
All right, Tom, for off-the-wall question. John, you're originally from Kansas City, is that right?
I am.
Okay, and so if you're originally from Kansas City, that means you have to love barbecue, right?
I do, big barbecue fan.
Okay, all right, so I'm going to ask you this. I'm cheating a little bit because I saw a little bit of your bio, so actually I knew the barbecue part of that. So the off-the-wall question is, the best barbecue place you've ever eaten besides anything in Kansas City? So outside of Kansas City, the best barbecue joint you've ever eaten at?
Very good question. I'm trying to think here. There's one that immediately comes to mind, and I'm trying to just rack my brain to see if there's anything else I've had that's better. I'd probably go Memphis. When we were there for the bowl game a couple years ago, I think it was called Rendezvous Barbecue, one of the big places there. It was really good. It was different. You know, I mean, like the whole style is a little more like mustard-based. Mm-hmm. Stuff that was going on there, but I did like it. I was impressed. It's not KC barbecue, but I'll give Memphis barbecue a shout out there.
Your favorite in Kansas City is?
I'm an Arthur Bryant's guy.
Okay.
I like the ambiance of the original Arthur Bryant's, where it's basically like a cafeteria. You go in, they just dump a whole pile of meat on your plate and some yes. fries, and you go to town. So I would say that, followed closely by Oklahoma Joe's. I mean, I do love the Z-Man, as everybody else does at OK Joe's.
You can't go wrong with either one of
Joe's
those.
Joe's Kansas City. What am I doing here? Joe's Kansas City. I don't want to call it Oklahoma Joe's.
Well, that's what it used to be, yeah. I understand that. You can't go wrong with either one of those. Finally, let everybody know how they can listen to your show.
Yeah, so we're on 1350 93.3 FM in Manhattan, but you can listen on TuneIn Radio. Honestly, the thing we've been really pushing lately, if you just have the Apple Podcast app on your phone, you have an iPhone, just go to the podcast app, search the game KMAN, and you can find all our stuff on demand there.
Fantastic. John, thanks for the time, and we'll see how far K-State can go in the tournament. We'll talk to you again soon.
Yeah, sounds great. Anytime.
That's John Kurt, sports director at 1350 KMAN, our guest today on the Sports Ticket, brought to you by Crossroads Bar and Grill and Downs.